kind to older folks because I have a lot of things to say to younger people as well. It's a lesson from Ecclesiastes, and if you will, open your Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Now, I'll be reading from that chapter, and I'll have it on the board, so you can follow me there, or you can follow me in your Bible if you wish. But it's a lesson about growing old gracefully. And inasmuch as I am among the very oldest in the congregation, I felt that perhaps I would be qualified to preach on this particular subject. A study from the book of Ecclesiastes. This great book, written by Solomon, is a book primarily about four things. First of all, it's a book about the purpose or the main purpose of life. It's a book about the right values of life and about the rules to produce a productive life. And it's also a book about facing the end of life. And really, that's what the 12th chapter of Ecclesiastes, at least a part of it, has to say. You know, everything that's living will eventually get old and die. The sentence of death came upon mankind in the Garden of Eden when God said to them, "Surely you shall die," or "dying," as some translations put it, "dying thou shalt die." They began dying at that point. And we begin dying the very moment we begin to live. And ultimately, death takes over. There's really nothing that we can stop this process of growing old except a premature death. So most everybody is going to grow old, and you young folks take note. Because, as I said, what we're saying to the old folks is one day going to apply to you. And so it's a good thing to think about it even in advance. He starts out in chapter 12 with some admonition to the young. He said, "Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, or as the New King James puts it, before the difficult days come, nor the years draw nigh when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them." Now what he's saying is that when you're young, it's better to prepare, it's better to start serving God, because when you get older, it gets harder. When you get older, you know, we get set in our ways. Old habits are hard to break, and it is hard to make changes whenever people get older. Now, it's not impossible, and certainly any time in life, whether young or old, is a time to decide to serve God. But nevertheless, young people, it's best to start early, to develop good habits, and to make right choices early in life. Because then when you get older, you find that life is much easier for you. Solomon describes the aging scenario. You know, just what takes place in the process of getting old. Now, somebody said this. Somebody tells us here, how to know that you're getting old. It says that when you get old, everything hurts, and what doesn't hurt doesn't work. When you get old, your knees buckle, but your belt won't. When you get old, you decide to forget the health problems or health foods because you need all the preservatives you can get. When you get old, you stoop to tie your shoes and wonder what else you can do while you're down there. When you get old, you think to yourself, if God wanted me to touch my toes, he would have put them on my knees. How true. When you get old, you spend a lot of time thinking of the hereafter. You go somewhere for something and wonder what you're here after. When you get old, you sink your teeth into a good steak and they stay there. Well, Solomon describes this process of getting old in a much more sophisticated way. And I'd like for us to look at what he has to say. He says, while the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain, in the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble and the strong men shall bow themselves and the grinders shall, that's really bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look out of the windows be darkened, the doors shall be shut in the streets when the sound of the grinding is low, and he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. Also, when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fear shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets, or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. Then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Now when we look at this description, which is of course highly figurative, poetic in many respects, it's a very beautiful description if you can say that death has a beautiful description. But let's look at each one of these things. He says, while the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened. This likely refers to the faculties of understanding and of the mind and of judgment. The Jewish prophets used the sun and the moon and the stars to describe the rulers of government. And here it seems that he's using these same figures in reference to the powers of man's constitution. And so there comes a time when we get older that, you know, our mental faculties fail us. And so it's like the sun, moon, and stars being darkened. Nor the clouds return after the rain. You know, it seems when people get older that depression often sets in. It seems to be cloudy in the spiritual sense. We have problems and depressions, and rain comes, and then it follows again. It just goes over and over again. There seems to be little joy with many. And he says, in the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble. The keepers of the house here refer to the hands. And the hands become shaky. You know, these hands that once earned a living and prepared the meal are now disabled. And the strong men shall bow themselves. He's talking here about, you know, the legs and the bones which once were strong, but now they're weak and bent. And then the grinders cease because they are few. We have a tendency to lose our teeth. They decay and they fall out. And also those that look out the windows, he says, are darkened. That is, our eyes become dim. Cataracts, perhaps, grows on our eyes and it's hard to see anything. And the doors shall be shut in the street. And that the idea there is that, you know, we have difficulty hearing. like the doors being closed and we can't really hear what's going on outside very well because our hearing is impaired, and that goes along with old age. Also, when the sound of the grinding is low, another metaphor indicating a problem with hearing. He shall rise up at the voice of a bird, can't sleep, wakes up so early every morning, can't sleep, has to get up. You know that feeling? And then he says, all the daughters of music shall be brought low. The daughters of music refer to the voice and to the lungs that often fail and to our breath that becomes shallow in addition to bad hearing, and all of these things that contribute to the enjoyment of music, you know, they go bad. And so all the daughters of music are brought low. Also, when they shall be afraid of that which is high. People who are older oftentimes have problems with their balance, and they have to be very careful. So they are afraid of getting up very high. And the fears shall be in the way because of bad balance, because of bad hearing and bad eyesight. We have to be careful because of falling along the way. So fears shall be in the way. And the almond tree shall flourish. He's speaking about our hair, if we have any. It turns white. It flourishes like the Brahman almond blossoms, which are white. And so that happens. The grasshopper shall be a burden. This is a kind of a difficult one. But it may be that what he's saying here is that when we get older, maybe we have spindly legs and arms and yet a fat belly like a grasshopper. Or it may simply mean that the burden that we have to bear, the weight of even a grasshopper is more than we can bear. And we become a burden in either case to others. All of that takes place whenever we get older. Desire shall fail. Our appetites oftentimes get bad. We don't have any appetite for food. And the sexual appetite wanes and ceases because man goeth to his long home. And his long home, of course, is the grave and eternity. And the mourners go about the streets. That is, the funeral procession takes place when we die, or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken. These are metaphors that describe death. The silver cord here represents the cord of life. The golden bowl, represents life as well. And it compares life to a golden bowl that is suspended by a silver cord. And the cord eventually breaks, the golden bowl falls to the earth and shatters. And that's a picture that he paints here of death. And also he says, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain. You know, they used earthen pitchers to go out to the cisterns or to the fountains to get their water and bring it in. And that earthen pitcher falls and breaks. That's like death. Or, he says, the wheel broken at the cistern. The water came from wells or cisterns, and there would be a windlass that would draw the water up. The windlass breaks. And the bucket, whatever they use, container, crashes to the bottom, and they can't get water. Well, the idea is when we die, then it's like that type of a scenario. Then the dust shall return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. You know, the flesh returns to dust, but the spirit lives on. The spirit does not die with the body. Whenever the body dies, the spirit leaves the body and goes back to God. He says in Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 20 and 21, he makes a distinction between the spirits of man and the spirits of beasts. He said, all go into one place, all are of the dust, and all turn to dust again. The body is just the dust. It is merely material elements. And then he asked, who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward, and the spirit of the beast that goeth downward to the earth? When beasts die, their spirit goes down into the earth and perishes. But man, when he dies, his spirit goes up to God. And there God reserves that spirit until the day of judgment, when it is reunited with the body. In 2 Timothy 1 and 10, the Apostle Paul points this out to us. He says, Jesus Christ, who hath abolished death and hath brought life and immortality to light through the gospel. We know a lot more about life after death than Solomon did, or the people in his day did. God had not revealed very much in those days. There's not much in the Old Testament about that. But in the New Testament, we have a lot more information about the spirit and where the spirit goes after death. I want to suggest to you who are older that growing old does not mean growing useless. Now, sometimes we seem to have the idea that when we get old, why, we're just not worth much, and there's not much that we can do. But growing old doesn't mean growing useless. We may slow down some, of course, and because of health problems, because of a lack of energy, and all of that, we can't do as much as we once did. But at the same time, when we get older, that doesn't mean that we're just simply useless. We know that much has been accomplished in old age. Old age can be very productive in many ways. There have been many who have done great things in their old age. There have been writers and politicians and musicians and actors, teachers, inventors in old age who have done marvelous things. In fact, Michelangelo painted the ceiling on the Sistine Chapel in Rome, and that's a huge area. I've been there to look at it. And he did that by lying on his back on a scaffold when he was almost 90. It took a number of weeks for him to paint that whole ceiling in those pictures that he painted. And at 91, Hilda Crooks climbed Mount Whitney, the highest mountain in the continental U.S. Will Durant finished his 5-volume History of Civilization at age 89. And these are just a few of those in older age that have accomplished a great deal. Old age can be very productive indeed. Older folks have much to offer. You older folks out there, there are a lot of things that you can do. You have much to offer. The Bible indicates that. Psalm 92, verse 12, beginning, he says, the righteous shall flourish like the palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those that be planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bring forth fruit in old age. If you have a tendency sometimes as an older person to get discouraged, try to remember that passage. Remember that they shall still bring forth fruit in old age. It's true. In Proverbs 16 and in verse 31, he says, the hoary head is a crown of glory if it be found in the way of righteousness. And then in Job 12, at verse 12, with the ancient is wisdom, and in length of days, understanding. Usually, people who are older are people who are wiser. They've had to live life. They've had to make their mistakes and profit by them. They have seen others who have made mistakes, and they have learned some lessons, maybe, that young people need to know about. So remember that older folks have a great deal to offer. You might ask the question, well, what do older people have to offer? You might be asking yourself that question. What can I do? What can I offer that's productive and worthwhile? Well, let me just suggest a few things. I want to suggest, first of all, that you as an older person can be a bridge builder. I'm sure that you've heard this poem, but it illustrates what I'm thinking about. An old man going along highway came at the evening, cold and gray, to a chasm vast and deep and wide, through which was flowing a sullen tide. The sullen stream had no fears for him, but he turned when safe on the other side and built a bridge to span the tide. Old man, said a fellow pilgrim near, you're wasting strength with building here. Your journey will end with the ending day. You never again must pass this way. You've crossed the chasm deep and wide. Why build you the bridge at the eventide? The builder lifted his old great head. Good friend, in the path I have come, he said, there followeth after me today, a youth whose feet must pass this way. This chasm that has been naught for me, to that fair-haired youth may a pitfall be. He too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I'm building the bridge for him. Older folks can be bridge builders. We can build bridges for the younger people by our experiences and by the things that we can do in helping our young friends. Not only that, but as elderly people, we can influence our grandkids and great-grandkids. You know, grandparents have a lot of influence upon their grandchildren, sometimes even more than the parents do. And there are a lot of things that we can help to teach our grandchildren and great-grandchildren if we just realize that and take advantage of that. Grandchildren usually idolize their grandparents. This article was an article that was found among Dr. James Dobson's writings, at least we think it was. He had many books and writings on home and on children. And this particular article was taken, I think, from one of his books. And it tells about a school where third graders were asked to write a short paper on the subject, what is a grandmother? And the following is what one little girl wrote. She said, a grandmother is a lady who has no children of her own. She likes other people's little girls and boys. A grandfather is a man grandmother. Grandmothers don't have to do anything except to be there. They're old, so they shouldn't have to play hard or run. If they take us for walks, they slow down past things like pretty leaves and caterpillars. They never say hurry up. Usually grandmothers are fat, but not too fat to tie your shoes. They wear glasses and funny clothes. They can take their teeth and gums off. Grandmothers don't have to be smart, only answer questions like, why isn't God married? And why do dogs chase cats? When they read to us, they don't skip or mind it if it's the same story over again. Everybody should try to have a grandmother, especially if they don't have television, because they are the only grown-ups that have time. Do you get that last line? They are the only grown-ups that have time. Grandparents, take some time with your grandchildren. You can have an influence over them. Also, be a good example to others, to the young people especially. The Bible teaches that older folks can teach the younger folks and should do that. In Titus 2, verses 2 through 4, Paul wrote that the aged men should be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, in charity, in patience. The aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands. So older people can teach others by example, but oftentimes in other ways as well. Well, not only teach, but certainly older folks can do some other things maybe because of the fact that they're retired. Maybe they can do some personal work. Maybe you could run some errands for someone who can't get out for themselves. Or perhaps you can visit someone who is sick or in some way show hospitality to someone else. Or perhaps use your telephone or send cards and certainly pray. All of these and many other like things older folks can do. Now, I understand that some older folks are limited in that. Some older folks are not able because perhaps of health problems, perhaps of other impairments, are not able to do all of these things that I've mentioned here. But usually we can do some of them. I think pretty well all of us could use a phone to call somebody who needs encouragement. And certainly all of us could send a card to somebody, and I think all of us could pray. And these are at least some of the things that we could do. And I believe that some older folks are in a position to do a great deal more than that. After retirement, it may give more time for you, you know, just to do more church work. We knew some people that were very close friends of ours, Wes and Dot Moss, who lived in Dothan, Alabama. After Wes retired from his job, he and Dot decided that they wanted to help out in some way. That he's not a preacher, he was a song leader, but he was not a preacher. He did teach some Bible classes. But they decided they wanted to be of help in places maybe where the church was really struggling. They had a friend that preached in Budapest, Hungary, and was supported there by various congregations. They contacted him and asked, if we were to come there, could we be of any help to you? And he said, absolutely. If you can come, come. And they did. I think they spent 2 years in Budapest, and they did a great deal of good while they were there. Even in a strange country and a strange language and all of that, they still were able to be very helpful in the church. In fact, they endeared themselves not only to the preacher but to those that were members there, so that they were called moms and pops. Another couple comes to mind. An older couple in up close to Nashville. When Romaine and I were in Canada, when we were working in that area, preaching there, I made a report to one of the churches in Franklin that was helping to support me. I came back, made a report to them about the work. And an elderly couple, I say elderly, you know, they're really not. I think they were at that time, they were in their early 60s. But they came to me after services and said, we want to hear a little bit more about this work. Could you come to my house tonight and tell us more about it and answer some questions? I said, well, yes. I went to their home, talked with them for I don't know how long, and they had all kinds of questions about, you know, the work up there and all. And they said, well, you know, we're thinking about going to a place somewhere like that and maybe being of some use. And I said, come. Well, they did. He retired, and they came. They came to Medicine Hat, or to Lethbridge, Alberta. And he even worked for a couple of years preaching for them. He was not a preacher. I mean, not a full-time preacher. He did speak somewhat. But he worked with them and helped a great deal and converted some folks there. And then later on, he returned back to the States. And then later on, he came back, he and his wife, and worked with me. And they just did a great amount of good. From that point, they went to another section of Canada and then somewhere else and spent the rest of their life. Or at least he did. He died while he was involved in that kind of thing. And that's just a thought. You know, some are capable of doing that. Some perhaps have a financial basis that they can do that, or perhaps can raise some support to do that. But it's just one of those things that older folks can do in the service of the Lord. I want to make some suggestions for growing old gracefully. First of all, start early. There's a little article that I clipped. It said a young girl said to her mother just after a white-haired visitor had left their home, "If I could be such an old lady as that, so beautiful, sweet, serene, and lovable, I should not mind growing old." The discerning mother replied, "Well, if you want to be that kind of an old lady, you'd better begin now. She does not impress me as a piece of work that was done in a hurry." And that's so true. Young people, take note. If you want to be the kind of an old person that is like this lady is in this particular article, then you'd better begin early in order to grow old gracefully. It takes time to develop into a graceful oldster. And while you're doing that, avoid sowing wild oats early in life, because it leads to a poor harvest in old age. You may remember this, but back quite a number of years ago, there was a famous baseball player by the name of Mickey Mantle. Now, Mickey Mantle played for the New York Yankees. He died in August of 1995 of liver cancer that was due primarily to 42 years of drinking. Near the end of his life, he quit drinking and lectured young people on how he was an example not to follow. And at his funeral, and by his request, the then famous country singer Roy Clark sang the ballad, "Yesterday When I Was Young." Now, you young folks probably don't even remember that song, but some of the older folks do, I'm sure. But the truth is that whenever you sow wild oats in younger years, you're going to have to reap a poor harvest in old age. Job 4:8 says, "Even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same." Someone said, "Most men spend the first half of their lives making the last half miserable." Isn't that pitiable? Secondly, in order to grow gracefully, cultivate a right attitude toward this process of aging. In other words, learn to laugh at yourself. You know, us folks, when we get older, sometimes we're pretty laughable, aren't we? And we need to learn to laugh at ourselves. And we need to keep as active as we possibly can. Keep on going as long as possible. Now, I know that some are limited a lot more than others because of their infirmities and age and health problems. But keep as active as you possibly can. And then there are certain things that we need to avoid as older people. First of all, we need to avoid grouchiness. It's so easy, you know, because when we get old and we don't feel good and we're depressed sometimes and things don't seem to go well in our lives, it's so easy to get grouchy. Let's avoid that. And let's avoid resenting youth. A lot of times older people resent young people simply because they're young. Well, remember, you were young once too, weren't you? And don't resent growing old. You'd be dead otherwise. So don't resent that. And don't feel sorry for yourself. And that's an easy thing to do when you get old with all of your infirmities, to feel sorry for yourself. Let's not do that. And don't dwell on your aches and pains. And you know, that's something else that is so easy to do. We like to talk about our aches and pains. I want to read this poem that someone wrote about aches and pains. It's entitled, "I'd Rather Say I'm Fine." There's nothing whatever the matter with me. I am just as healthy as I can be. I have arthritis in both my knees, and when I talk with a wheeze. My pulse is weak and my blood is thin, but I'm awfully well for the shape I'm in. My teeth eventually have to come out, and my diet I hate to think about. I'm overweight and I can't get thin, but I'm awfully well for the shape I'm in. I think my liver's out of whack, and a terrible pain is in my back. My hearing is poor and my sight is dim, and everything seems to be out of trim. My food and saliva don't seem to blend, but I'm awfully well for the shape I'm in. I have arch supports on both my feet, or I wouldn't be able to walk the street. Sleeplessness I have night after night, and in the mornings I look a sight. I'm practically living on aspirin, but I'm awfully well for the shape I'm in. The moral is, as this tale we unfold, that for you and me who are growing old, it is better to say I'm fine with a grin than to let them know the shape we're in." I think that's true. So let's not, you know, dwell on our aches and pains. There's a prayer that I think we should learn, a prayer that I believe would be good for all of us to pray, if not audibly, certainly mentally. It goes like this. "Lord, thou knowest that I'm growing old. Keep me from becoming talkative and possessed with the idea that I must express myself on every subject. Release me from the craving to straighten out everybody's affairs. Keep my mind free from the recital of endless details. Give me wings to get to the point. Seal my lips when I'm inclined to tell of my aches and pains. They are increasing with the years, and my love to speak of them grows sweeter as time goes on. Teach me the glorious lesson that occasionally I may be wrong. Make me thoughtful, but not nosy, helpful, but not bossy. With my vast store of wisdom and experience, it does seem a pity not to use it all. But thou, Lord, knowest that I want a few friends left at the end." Amen. A good prayer for us to think about and to pray. Don't give up living. Don't give up on your living until you're dead. You know, some people do that. Some people just decide, you know, somewhere in their old age, well, I'm not worth anything anyway, and I've put in my time, and and I don't need to worry about doing anything else. And so they just give up on life and they give up on trying, and they die before they die. I want to share with you a little article, if I can find it. Several years ago, the Associated Press ran the story of Andre Raffray. 30 years ago, at the age of 47, now this is an old article, so this is not up to date. 30 years ago, at age 47, he worked out a real estate deal with Jean Calment, age 90. He would pay her $500 each month until her death in order to secure ownership of her apartment in Ailes, France, benefiting both buyers and seniors on a fixed income. But unfortunately for Raffray, Jean Calment was still alive at age 120. She outlived Raffray, who died in December of 95 at the age of 77. He paid $184,000 for an apartment that he never lived in. And according to the contract, Raffray's survivors had to continue payment until Mrs. Calment died. Don't die before you die. There's too many things that can be accomplished by you. But I said to begin with that I wasn't talking just to the older folks. I want to talk to some of you younger folks, not some of the young and some of the middle-aged people. Because, you know, young folks have a responsibility toward elderly people. There's a family responsibility. Children, even grandchildren, have a responsibility toward their own. In Proverbs 23 and verse 22, the wise man said, "Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she's old." You owe them respect. 1 Timothy 5, 4 and 8 speaks about the responsibility of children and grandchildren toward their family. "But if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show piety at home and to repay their parents, for this is good and acceptable before God. But if anyone does not provide for his own," listen to this, "and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel." It's a responsibility that falls upon family. Younger folks need to show respect and courtesy and patience with older people. A few days ago, I observed this kind of thing happening. There was an older man that had pulled up to a stoplight. The light changed, and he was a little bit slow at pulling out after the green light turned on. And there was a car behind him, a younger man in that car, and immediately he sat down on his horn, blowing. That's discourteous, isn't it? We need to show respect and courtesy and some patience toward older people. Back in Leviticus 19 and verse 32, God said, "Thou shalt rise up before the hoary head and honor the face of the old man and fear thy God, I am the Lord." That's God's requirement. Luke 6:31, Jesus taught the golden rule. "As you would that men should do to you, do you also to them likewise." Young people, remember, one of these days you're going to be older. How do you want to be treated when you get older? Learn to respect and show patience and courtesy toward older people. Visit with them. Talk to them. Let them know they're not forgotten. You know, one of the great tragedies in our society, and sometimes even among Christians, is that a lot of younger people just pay no attention to elderly people. Whenever they get sick, homebound, or whatever, they just forget about them. But we don't need to do that. Let me share with you another little thought. little article. It was grandfather's birthday. He was 79. He got up early, showered, combed his hair, and put on his Sunday best so he would look nice when they came. He skipped his daily walk to the town cafe where he had his coffee with his cronies. He wanted to be home when they came. He put his porch chair on the sidewalk so he could get a better view of the street when they drove up to help celebrate his birthday. At noon, he got tired but decided to forego his nap so he could be there when they came. Most of the rest of the afternoon, he spent near the telephone so he could answer it when they called. He had 5 married children, 13 grandchildren, and 3 great-grandchildren. 1 son and daughter lived within 10 miles of his place. They hadn't visited him for a long time, but today was his birthday, and they were sure to come. At supper, he sat on the porch waiting. At 8:30, he went to his room to prepare for bed. Before retiring, he left a note on the door, quote, "Be sure to wake me up when they come." It was grandfather's birthday. He was 79. You know, that kind of thing happens all too often. Young folks, and I mean when I say young folks, younger than the old generation that we're talking about, don't forget the older folks. And also try to picture them as they once were. And over when people get older, and you know we lose so much, not just hair, but we lose our looks and our strength and so much. And sometimes we lose our mind. Try to remember people as they once were. There was a lady that had been in a nursing home in Scotland for quite a while, and she died in that nursing home, and she left nothing of monetary value, but while a nurse was going through the only possessions that she left, she found a poem which the old woman had written, and here it is. What do you see, nurses? What do you see? What are you thinking when you're looking at me? A crabby old woman, not very wise, uncertain of habit with faraway eyes? I'm a small child of 10 with a mother and father, brothers and sisters who love one another. A bride in her 20s, my heart gives a leap, remembering the vow that I promised to keep. A woman of 30, my young now grow fast, bound to each other with ties that should last. At 40, my sons have grown and have gone, but my man is beside me to see I don't mourn. At 50, once more babies play around my knees. Again, we know children, my husband and me. I'm an old woman now, and nature's cruel. 'Tis her jest to make old age look like a fool. The body, it crumbles. Grace and vigor depart. There's now a stone where I once had a heart. But inside this old carcass, a young girl still dwells. And now and again, my battered heart swells. I remember the joys and I remember the pain. And I'm loving and living life over again. I think of the years, all too few, gone too fast. And accept the stark fact that nothing can last. Open your eyes, nurses. Open and see. Not a crabbed old woman. Look closer. See me. This poem, when my mother was in the nursing home after she had Alzheimer's for several years, had lived with us, and finally got to a point where we couldn't take care of her any longer. And she went to the nursing home. I took this poem and I put it up on the wall by her bed so that the nurses could see that. Let's keep that in mind. Try to picture them as they once were. When we reach the summit of life, and whenever death stares us in the face, let's be like the Apostle Paul. In 2 Timothy 4, 6 through 8, he said, "Now I'm ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I fought a good fight, I finished my course, I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing." That's a good way for us to approach old age. In Philippians 1:23, Paul said he had a desire to depart and to be with Christ, which is far better. And it is for those of us who are older as Christians, that's just far better than what's on this earth. Romans 8:18 tells us why. "For I reckon that the sufferings of the present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us." It may be that there are some older folks here that have not prepared themselves for such an occasion. Or it may be that some of the younger folks have not made preparations that they should in order to get on the right side of God. If that should be the case, I would like to encourage you to take this opportunity. You don't have any lease on life. When we get older, that lease is even less. So why not tonight take advantage of this opportunity to come and to make your relationship with God right? Become a Christian if you're not one. Or if you're one and you've been unfaithful, come and make it right with God so that you can lay your head in peace at the time of your departure from this earth. Won't you do that while we stand together and while we sing?